Welcome back. Okay, so for our penultimate discussion, that's a fancy word for a second to last, we'll take a look at some stock characteristics that are important to know, especially with regard to dividends. Oh, we love dividends. But first, let's take a look on slide 61 at the stock spinoff. What is a spinoff? Well, it's a conversion of one of a firm's subsidiaries to a standalone company by distribution of stock in that new company to existing shareholders. So what's happened? The company has decided that it's better off that this part of their company be its own stock, be its own company. And they are going to then give you stock in the new company. And they'll take, and your stock will fall in value as they pull out that part of the company. The cool thing about this is the IRS doesn't consider it a transaction. So you're not taxed. You're not hitting with a capital gains tax. But you have to decide whether you want to keep the new company or sell it, or maybe keep the new company and sell the old company. Sometimes the existing company owns a majority of the new company. When Pepsi Cola sold off Yum Brands, which is Kentucky Fried Rat, Pizza Crap, and Taco Smell. I'm sorry, Kentucky Fried Chicken, Pizza Hut, and Taco Bell. Right. They still owned quite a bit of the shares, so they basically called the shots. Another example is Altria. The old name was Philip Morris. They owned Kraft. They owned Miller Brewing. They owned Nabisco. They owned Boca. They owned a lot of companies. Boca Burger, if you can believe that, a vegetarian burger. And they decided to spin off their food operations. So they spun off Kraft. And then they spun off Miller Brewing, and then they spun off their international tobacco business. And all these companies are huge companies in their own right, and you can buy those shares. Well, Kraft split itself into Kraft and Mondelez, whatever that's the company that makes Oreos. And then Kraft got together with Heinz, so you see there's a whole bunch of stuff going on. The history of spinoffs has been checkered. Some spinoffs have done better than the companies that spun them off. And examples of this are the Baby Bells that were spun off from the old AT&T back in 1984. Huh? You don't remember that, but it was a big deal. The telephone company was one big company, and they split it up into 9 Baby Bells, and then AT&T, which was the long-distance company, and then AT&T spun off Western Electric and the Bell Labs. That became Lucent. We'll see Lucent later on. And then the Baby Bells started eating one another, and finally the Baby Bells got so large that they ate AT&T. That's what the new AT&T is. It used to be Southwest Bell, and Verizon used to be Bell Atlantic, but they ate 9X, and it just, yeah, they got big. Some spinoffs didn't do so well. For example, Coca-Cola Enterprises. Huh? Coca-Cola is the company that makes the stuff, the syrup that turns into Coke. Coca-Cola Enterprises was the bottling operation, and they didn't do so well. Then I think what happened is that Coca-Cola eventually bought them back. That was the company that actually bottled the stuff, and the idea was they could bottle other companies too. They could bid for other companies. They didn't really do a good job, so I think they got bought back. And then we already said Lucent was spun off from the old TNT, and it survived. It's still around, but it did not do well. We'll come back to that later on. Slide 62, a stock split. Now, you need to understand this, folks, because most people don't really understand what's going on. It sounds cool, right? You had two. You had one share, now you have two. You had 100 shares, now you have 200 shares. Yippee! No, the price drops in half. This is an accounting maneuver in which a company increases the number of shares outstanding by exchanging a specified number of new shares of stock for each outstanding share. Now, there used to be a technological reason for doing this. Remember the people screaming and hollering on the floor of the exchange? They wanted you to buy in 100 round lots. So what the companies would do is they would lower the price, they would split the stock, lower the price, issue more shares, basically. so that the price was such that people could actually buy 100 shares at a time. But that's gone. That's not important. That's technology has blown that out of the water. So a stock split is really nothing, folks. It is a psychological increase at best. And one individual who we'll discuss again in the future, Warren Buffett, has always thought of it as a gimmick. And in the 1960s, when he started his company, Berkshire Hathaway, he refused to split his stock. He just simply, this is not right, this is not what I want, I don't want to play this game. A single share now goes for over $265,000. Exactly, dear students. This is the kind of wealth that can be generated by large companies who have their roots deep in the economy. You never heard, maybe you've heard of Berkshire Hathaway, but maybe you've seen their real estate company, but they also own Geico, they own the Dairy Queen, they own See's Candy, they own all kinds of oil companies and railroad companies, so it's a huge conglomeration. And so this is what would have happened if Coca-Cola or General Electric or McDonald's had never split their stock. A single share would go for $80,000 or $200,000. You see? That's the kind of wealth. So when you see a stock split, yeah, excitement, yeah, big deal. You got more shares, but the price drops. And then there are 3-for-1 splits, 3-for-2 splits, 1-for-5 splits. Wait a minute, what's going on? That's called a reverse split. When the stock price gets too low, then it looks scary. The stock is selling for 80 cents. So what they'll do is they'll take 5 of your shares, give you 1 share, and increase the price by 5 times. So it looks like the price is a little higher. There's reasons for that, but again, it's a maneuver. It's an accounting maneuver. There's no increase in value. There's no decrease in value. Slide number 63, treasury stock. Huh? What is this? Well, this is important in that we need to understand what are called share buybacks or just buybacks. Stock repurchases, they're sometimes called. The company can turn around and buy back their shares. But when they do that, they go in the treasury. They're no longer out there in the world being traded. And so that reduces the number of outstanding shares. You economics students, when you reduce the supply, if the demand doesn't change, what should happen? No guarantees, but the price should go up. So the logic being is that after the buyback, there is less supply, fewer shares of outstanding stock, and now existing shareholders have a larger percentage, and the price should go up. And sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. I like companies that buy back their shares when the price is low, but often companies will buy back their price when the price is high to make it go higher, and that's unsustainable. During the run-up of the 1990s, share buybacks were often seen as a better alternative to dividend increases. Why? Because dividends you have to pay taxes on, and the taxes were higher than capital gains. The belief was that investors were more interested in capital gains than dividends, and that buybacks increased the potential for capital gains by reducing the supply of stocks. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't work. So watch for that. Watch for share buybacks, share repurchases. And sometimes these companies, they get tons of cash. They don't know what to do with it. Right? So, hey, they buy back their shares. Slide number 64. Classifications of common stock. Some companies will have Class A, Class B. Now, this is not the Class A, B of mutual funds. That's how we charge people. But these classifications have different privileges and different rights and obligations and benefits. Sometimes, for example, the family will have the Class B shares, and they pay, the family that started the company and their heirs will have Class B shares, and they pay a high dividend, but they have no voting rights. In other words, the family has extricated themselves from the company, and they just want the dividends. They just want the money. And the Class A shares will have the voting rights, and they'll be the ones that are sold to the public. Sometimes vice versa. For example, I think it was, which one company? Was it Snap? Came out with 2 share classes. One share class was the one that was offered to the world, and they have no voting rights. And the people who started Snap, the mobile application that younger folks use, I've never used it. they control the company. So the retail investors have no voting rights. Interesting. I don't like that too much. But that's their decision. If we go back to Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett's company, if you recall that the shares, that the original shares are the Class A shares, Berk A, and they're selling around $265,000 each. Well, in the 1990s, the financial world pressed Warren Buffett to offer a lower cost version of his stock, which I think was selling for about $20,000 then. He didn't want to do it. He did not want to do it, but they kind of pressed him into doing it. It's like, okay. So he came out with the Class B shares, and just to get their goat, he didn't want to be very nice. He wanted to be a little ornery. He is a bit of a, the word we use is curmudgeon. He issued them at $1,160 each, which is still pretty high, especially in the 90s. And he, in the prospectus, he said he wouldn't buy them. He said, you want to buy my shares, you buy the Class A shares. Well. What happened is all of a sudden, after, a couple decades, Mr. Barrett, about 16 years, 15 years ago, late 2000s, fast forward, Mr. Buffett was able to use his Class B shares like cash and buy other companies. So he split them 50-1 so that the price would go down dramatically, and he could use them like cash to buy other companies. So it turned out he's a wily guy. He's a pretty sharp guy, and even when he doesn't want to do something, he does it. It turns out well for him. Very good, very smart. I watch him, read about him, and watch what he does. Okay, where are we? Slide number 65. You will hear people talk about the par value, and I still haven't figured out what the hell this means. It's this face value of the stock, and it's usually a meaningless number. Sometimes a dollar, sometimes 1 cent. I don't know. I don't understand what it means, but you'll hear people talk about the par value of the stock. Par value of bonds is far more important. When we get the bonds, yes, that's important. Now, the book value, interesting. We'll discuss book value in more detail later, but that's the actual accounting value of the company. It is not the market value, folks. The market value is usually far more. And I used to ask people to go look up the book value, but it's harder and harder to find, especially since Yahoo destroyed their website. But book value, you accountants, you know this, right? You take the stockholders' equity in the firm. What is that? Assets minus liabilities. Net worth is what the term we use in the financial planning class. That's the equity. That's what, if you sold off all the assets, paid off all the debts, that's what you'd have left in your pocket. And it is typically much less than the market value, which makes sense, because a business intact, that's a going concern, is what the IRS calls it. A company that's in business is usually worth far more than the assets that they own. Think of a restaurant. I mean, what do they own? They have a lot of pots and pans and restaurant equipment and the tables and the chairs and all that. But the company itself, the business itself, is worth far more than the assets that you own. So book value is an interesting accounting statistic, but it's not that interesting when it comes to our market value, the prevailing market. Now, there are a few situations, not many, where the book value will fall below the market value. This is when the investment community really believes that this company is going down the tubes. And when that happens, there's a real danger of corporate raiders coming in, buying up 50% plus one. That means they own the company now, once they own 50% plus one share. And they will then liquidate the company, pay off all the debts, walk away with the assets. They're called corporate raiders, takeover artists, private equity. They go by various names. And that's a sad thing, because then you're out of a job. But the economists and the private equity corporate raiders, if they deemed to talk to you, would tell you, you don't understand. This company, this capital, this resource is being wasted. It needs to be unlocked. It needs to be tilled under. Like think of the farmers. They have to till the ground and put the old crops underneath and make room for the new crops. And that doesn't really make you feel very good when you lost your job. And this, dear students, is the reason we have unemployment insurance. It's not to pay people not to work, no. It's because we want that capital to be unlocked. We want those people and that those resources to be deployed in a better, more productive manner. And so we pay people, hey, you lost your job, here's something to get you going to get to the next place, which is more productive. Does that make sense? You don't have to agree with me. I'm just telling you that's the reasoning behind it. Is it perfect? Of course not. Are there some people who try their best not to work? Yes, there are. I feel sorry for them. They don't feel sorry for themselves, but I feel sorry for them because that's a horrible way to live. But nothing's perfect. And we don't want that capital to be locked up. We want it to be opened and redeployed. Sounds like an ad. I apologize. 66, slide 66. Okay, dividends, yeah! We're ready to discuss dividends again. We love dividends. We've already discussed these. They are shares of the share of the earnings that are given to the stockholders. So the company earns money, and they can retain those earnings, and you accounting students remember retained earnings, right. Or they can pay them out in the form of dividends. Now, in the United States and countries that at one time were associated with the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, South Africa, Hong Kong, and the UK, right? These companies normally pay quarterly. Outside the United States and the other UK, sometimes called Commonwealth countries, they pay every 6 months, or sometimes they pay once a year. Oh, well, that's different, right? But remember that. We pay quarterly in the United States. The board of directors decides how much, if any, dividends should be paid and when to pay them. They don't have to pay dividends, folks. There's no mandatory requirement that they pay dividends. Now, some companies have paid dividends for over 100 years, like General Electric. But other companies have never paid a dime of dividends. So you have to look at the history, see what they've done. And we'll discuss that in detail in Chapter 6. Dividends are usually percentage of the earnings per share. So the company earns a certain amount of money per share, and these are calculations we're going to learn how to do. There's a couple of worksheets for you to play with. The amount of annual earnings available to common shareholders as stated on a per share basis. So we can look at our stock as a little engine and a little factory, and our stock generated 50 cents of earnings, and we have 100 shares, so that's $5. No, I'm sorry. Did I say that right? No, $50. 100 shares times 50, yeah, $50. But then they only paid out, maybe 25 cents. So they paid us 25 cents per share, 100 shares, that's $25. Cool? They don't usually pay out the entire amount because they need money to plow back into the company and grow the company. So they don't usually, sometimes they do, but they don't usually pay you all the earnings per share. They retain some of their earnings, and they will let the accountants deal with that. So here's an example, slide 67. We have a company that reports net profit of $1 million. Is that a lot of money? Yeah, to you and me it is, but we have to know how many shares are out there. So if there are 500,000 shares, we take $1 million of earnings divided by the 500,000 shares, and we get $2 earnings per share. Make sense? Okay, it's not that hard, right? The board of directors might decide to pay out 50% of the earnings per share in the form of dividends. Therefore, each shareholder would receive a dollar dividend. If they have 100 shares, they'd get $100. If they have 25 shares, they get $25. And that 50% is called the dividend payout ratio. The company is paying out 50% of their earnings to shareholders in the form of dividends, and they're keeping the other 50% as retained earnings. Okay, so that's a calculation that you can do and it's on this worksheet number 2, and we'll refer to this again, because you're going to, this is when we would stop in the face-to-face class and do some of these calculations. But you can stop now, go to worksheet number 2, or you can wait until the end and do it on your own. The dividend yield is a measure that relates the dividends to the share price and puts stock dividends on a relative percentage basis rather than an absolute dollar basis. Yeah, it's great to know that your stock is paying a dollar dividend, but how much did it cost you to get that dollar? That's the dividend yield. So, for example, we take our example a little further. If the stock in the previous slide that was paying a dollar dividend were selling for $20, then our dividend yield would be 5%. And that's a very easy calculation. A dollar dividend divided by the market price, $20 price, gives us 5%, 0.05. Make sure I didn't screw up. Get your calculator out. And so what does this do for us, dear students? It allows us to easily compare our stocks with other income-oriented vehicles, such as bonds or savings accounts. Right? We're getting 4% from a stock or 3% from a stock. We're getting 0.1% from a savings account. What's the difference? You know what the difference is. That stock price is not guaranteed. That company could go bankrupt and you lose everything. Whereas the savings account, yeah, it's only paying you 0.1%, maybe it's a little bit more, but you ain't going to lose that money. The federal government is backing you up. So although we can compare the two, we understand that there are significant differences. Traditionally, 3 to 6% was normal. In the 1990s, it went down to 2%. As we said, in March of 2000, the height of the internet bubble, it went to 1%. And then dividends went back up above 3% in the 2008-09 turmoil. And now they're back down to around 2%. And what are we talking about? We're talking about the S&P 500, Standard & Poor's 500. Some companies are paying much higher dividends. Some companies are not paying any dividends. So again, it's an aggregate number for the Standard & Poor's 500. But we're going to see this company. Some companies pay a lot more dividends, and some companies don't pay any dividends. Slide number 69. Now, here are some important dates that I want you to remember. I know I'm not big on history, folks. I don't ask people to remember dates in history. But these are dates with regard to what's going on in the process of paying your dividends. The date that the board declares the dividend is called the declaration date. That's a tough one, right? But that's not when they actually pay it. They say, if you're a shareholder on a certain date, maybe June 18th or whatever it is, you will receive the dividend. So they give you plenty of time to either buy the stock if you want to buy it or sell it if you don't want the dividend. However, the ex-dividend date is 3 days before the date of record. What? This is the important date. This is the date that you have to own the shares to be eligible to get the dividend. Huh? Hang on a minute. We'll explain it on the next slide. It's a little tricky. And then the payment date is actually a few weeks later. You don't actually get the money that day. It takes a few weeks for them to get it to you. So why? Why, dear students, on slide 70, is the ex-dividend date 3 days before the date of record? Well, it's because of the way stock transactions close. Stock transactions close in 3 days. You purchase the stock on June 15th. You don't actually get it until June 19th. Are you with me? Understand? So the same thing is true if you sell a stock. If you sell a stock on June 15th, you don't get the money until June 18th. Yes, that's how stocks transactions close in 3 days. Mutual funds transactions, 1 day. And bonds are 1 day. But stocks are 3 days. It used to be 5 days. We're talking business days. Theoretically, therefore, the opening share price on the ex-dividend date should reflect a drop in price commensurate with the amount of the dividend. Huh? Yeah, in other words, think about it. They're taking out a dollar and giving it to you, so the stock price should fall a dollar. That's called the ex-dividend drop. You know, the stock should drop by the amount that the dividend is being paid. But it doesn't work that way, folks. It never really works that way because in the market price, because the prices are changing all the time. So you'll hear people on slide 71 say, don't buy the dividend. It's a common saying in the industry. The translation is, look, you're often better off waiting until the ex-dividend date before buying the stock. Why? Here's the logic. Although I don't agree with it, I'm telling you what, you know, what the logic is. Dividends are taxable transactions. If you buy the dividend, you will buy the stock just before the ex-dividend date. You will be responsible for paying the tax. And, presumably, the stock price will fall commensurate with the amount of the dividend. It's a fancy word for a long with, right? So you're better off waiting until after the ex-dividend date so you will get the stock at a better price and not generate a taxable transaction. Folks, if you're talking about tens of thousands of dollars or whatever, okay, maybe that makes sense. But for most of us, it's not going to be much money. It's not that big a deal. It shouldn't be, the, as the saying goes, the tail that wags the dog. I think it's ridiculous. In fact, the first company I worked for, they had a client who used to buy the dividend. That was his strategy. He would take a good chunk of change, and he would buy shares of a company that was going to pay a hefty dividend right before the ex-dividend date, and then sell the shares, collect the dividend. So he did the exact opposite. He bought the dividend, and I guess it worked for him. He wasn't my client, and I would have recommended, I would have said, look, wouldn't you rather just not play this game? You know, you generate transactions. You have to pay the transaction fees, the commissions, plus the dividend taxes. Wouldn't it be better to just hold on to the stock for the long term and collect dividends? But I didn't talk to the guy. I didn't know. It wasn't me. It wasn't my client. Keep my mouth shut. I was a new kid on the block. So you decide. My humble opinion, just buy the stock. Don't worry about the dividend. Don't let the tail wag the dog. Slide 72. Now, this is important, and this is something you should worry about, and that's the types of dividends. There are basically two types of dividends. There are cash dividends and stock dividends. Folks, if you don't remember this, that's fine. That's not really fine. I want you to remember it, but just remember that you want cash dividends. If somebody offers you stock dividends, you say, thank you very much, no thank you. Because cash dividends are money in your pocket. Cash dividends are transactions that give you cash. Now, they don't send you a check anymore. They electronically deposit the money in your brokerage account. Thank you very much. Whereas stock dividends are payments of dividends in the form of additional shares of stock. What does that mean? They are diluting the stock. It's like a stock split. All the things being equal, and they never are, stock dividends have no value because they constitute a dilution of ownership. So, for example, the board of directors declares a 10% stock dividend. For every 10 shares you own, you now get an extra share. Yippee! What happens to the price of the shares? They drop 10%. So, big deal! they gave you an extra share, but the price, it's like a stock split. It's very much like a stock split. So, at the very least, thank you very much, IRS. They don't tax you on a stock dividend. Why? Because they're not giving you anything. Well, wow, great. It's not worth anything anyway, so why is that such a big deal? At least the IRS is not trying to tax us on something that's not worth anything. So if you are enticed with a company that's paying a stock dividend, you say no thank you. Now here's where it gets tricky. Slide 73. A dividend reinvestment plan is a plan in which shareholders have the cash dividends automatically reinvested in additional shares of the firm's common stock. So it sounds like a stock dividend, isn't it? It is not. They are not creating any more shares. They're not issuing any more shares. What they are doing is they're going out into the marketplace and buying shares and then selling them to you with your dividends. There are no additional shares issued, no dilution of ownership, and this is a taxable transaction because you're getting cash, but you're using it to buy shares. Now, this is what happens in your mutual fund, folks. Mutual funds, unless you say otherwise, are dividend reinvestment plans. And they are an excellent way, folks. Excellent, low-cost way to invest in large companies, because most of the companies that run these are already very large. So let's read together at the bottom. DRIPs, and I love the name, Dividend Reinvestment Plan, a DRIP, are an excellent way to own stock for those interested in long-term growth. Isn't that what we're interested in? And they don't need or not interested in the current income from the dividends. It allows the investor to take advantage of compounding automatically with normally no or very small transaction costs. Investing in a company like General Electric or Johnson & Johnson in this way is almost like investing in a mutual fund, because companies like General Electric are incredibly diversified. They have, you know, locomotives and power plants and medical test equipment and financials. I think they're selling off their financial that they already have. They make diamonds. I mean, General Electric has their roots deep in the economy. So on the website and in Canvas, you will see an example of a dividend reinvestment plan with Sempra, SDG&E, Sempra. And you'll see that you get a little bit of dividend, you get a little bit of shares, but it builds. It's a great way to build long-term substantial wealth prudently with companies that have their roots deep in the economy. Look, is SDG&E going anywhere, folks? Sempra? No. They're going to, unless people decide that they're going to take cold showers in the dark, they're going to want to heat their water, they're going to want to turn the lights on, they're going to want to cook eating raw food. There are some raw foodists who don't, yes. In fact, there's a little restaurant in OB that is fabulous, folks. It's called Peace Pies, and the food is really good. It ain't cheap, but it's all raw, and I can't believe it. And I'm sure Sempra's going, darn it, don't they need to cook? Oh, they have to keep the lights on. So you want dividend reinvestment plans if you are going to be a long-term investor, prudent in large companies that have their roots deep in the economy. Think about it. Look at the example. Okay. Our last slide for this presentation, we introduce the most widely watched and discussed market statistic, and that is the price-to-earnings ratio. P-E, P/E, you'll see it written as P/E, you'll see it written as P-E. It's a very simple calculation. We take the price of the stock and we divide it by the earnings per share, price-to-earnings ratio. So in our previous example, if we're looking at a $20 stock with $2 worth of earnings, that would be $20 of price divided by $2 of earnings, or 10. Now don't put a dollar sign, don't put a percent sign, it is unitless. But it is a PE of 10. And what does that mean? Well, depends on who you talk to. Traditionally, stocks sold for PE ratios of 5 to 15 or so, and companies that were growing fast would have 20 or a little bit more. But during certain times, especially during the 1980s and 90s, especially the 90s, PEs of 50, 100 or more were not unusual. In fact, now we have some companies with huge PEs. And in the 2008 turmoil, PE ratios came down greatly. Why? Because the price fell greatly. And so you have to understand a quotient, right? You can make a quotient bigger by increasing the numerator, the number on the top, or you can make it bigger by decreasing the earnings. You can make it smaller by making the number on top smaller, or you can make it smaller by making the number on the top bigger. So, did I say that right? It's math, folks, but it's actually arithmetic. It's a quotient. So you can either increase the numerator to make it bigger or decrease the denominator. But if you make it smaller, you can decrease the numerator or increase the denominator. And that will make it smaller. So we'll discuss PE in detail. If I confused you at the very end, I apologize. Not that hard. Take price divided by earnings. And we'll take a look at PEs. It's one of the things you're going to look up for different companies. And we'll discuss this in detail over the next few chapters. Okay? So go back over this. Make sure you understand these characteristics, especially dividends, because dividends don't lie. Dividends are cash in our pocket. We love dividends. And then we'll be ready for our final presentation of this module, Introduction to Stocks, where we discuss the different types of stocks and then some strategies along with stock investing strategies, along with a very important statistic, market capitalization. Now, if you haven't done so, we want you to do stock worksheet number 2. Okay, make sure you do stock worksheet number 2, and we'll see you in our final presentation. Be awesome, dear students. Study hard and bring honor and glory to Southwestern Community College.